You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Today is the final day of our series, First Wisconsinites, dispatches from Native American life in Wisconsin today. Today, we're looking at the role of veterans in tribal communities. Kerry Matoxin is manager of the United Nations Veteran Department. He's a member of the United Nations of Wisconsin. Kerry, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Well, talk about the role that veterans play in Native American communities around Wisconsin.
It's pretty interesting. Whenever there's a gathering of a community, a Native community, it's always the veterans that will lead the way to start off the event. So whether if it's a gathering of all the tribal members, a meeting, or at our powwows, which every tribe has.
Yeah, talk about the role they play in powwows, please.
Again, they lead the way in for everybody. It's called the Grand Entry. One of the better ones probably are Indian Summer, which we just had. I think it was Labor Day weekend in Milwaukee. All the tribes have representation, and the vets bring in their Eagle staffs, and we probably had, I think Saturday afternoon, we probably had 12 Eagle staffs out there.
Can you talk about the Eagle staff and the Eagle feather, please?
Eagle staffs, it's just, I shouldn't say just, but it is, each veteran organization will have one. It's like their American flag, if you will, okay? We had those before the American flag. They're all different. Every tribe's got a different way that they do a staff. Some have an eagle head on top of it. Some will have deer antlers on theirs on top of it. Then they'll have a streamer of eagle feathers coming down it. Some represent every battle that there's ever been, you know it. And they'll have the colors of those battles, ribbons, if you will, military ribbon colors on those. And I know if you go, we have gone to the Ira Hayes days, and Ira Hayes is one of the veterans that raised the American flag at Iwo Jima. And that's in Sacaton, Arizona. We've taken our staff down there, and different tribes have. And when you partake, then they give you a streamer, you know. So it's kind of like a tribal flag, you know. What can I tell you? It's been all over.
And as I understand it, the eagle feather itself is a very powerful symbol. Is that right?
There's a creation story, and you're asking me stuff. I got to think off the top of my head here, but. The creator's story is, you know, that's the highest flying bird that there is. Natives, we can possess eagle feathers. To get that, we have to apply for a permit to the U.S. Wildlife and Game, Fishing and Gaming. And then you apply for one, just like, you know, it may take 5 years. Hmm. To get what you want, or it may take 6 months, depending. You can ask just for plain feathers, or you can ask for a whole eagle. And then once you get the feather, I got to tell you a quick story.
Sure.
First time I ever got one, I was home on leave. I was stationed in Spain, and I came home on leave, and we had gotten an eagle from delivered UPS in a big container of ice. My brother had ordered one, and we knew nothing about it. So this is the first time I've ever dealt with this now, okay? Mm-hmm. So we didn't know what to do with it. So we had a young lady come over and bless that feather, or that eagle. And it was really interesting because there's protocol that's got to be done. You just don't go ahead and start taking stuff off, you know? She burned some tobacco. She dug a hole in by my dad's place and my mom's. And she said some prayers. And once she was done, she did some stuff, buried some stuff in the ground, and she says, "Now this is yours. You can do what you want to do with it." So it's a formality, you know, that we take spiritually, and I can give a feather out. I'm a veteran. Hmm. I'm a retired veteran. I did 20 years in the United States Air Force, so I have given out feathers, and again. Each tribe has different ways of the way they do things, okay? A good example would be the Ho-Chunk Nation. They have a, whenever there's a feather dropped, say at a powwow, okay, and they'll have, the Ho-Chunks will have a veteran there to pick up that feather. And when they pick up that feather, there's a ceremony that's done. No pictures are allowed to be taken or anything, no recordings. And when he's all done, whenever the ceremony is all done, he can either keep that feather or he can give it back to the person that dropped the feather. And then that person can do what they want. But the combat veteran that picks up that feather, he must tell his story then, his combat story, so it can become an emotional event for a veteran when it does happen. It don't happen a lot, but when it does happen, it is a spiritual thing then.
We're talking to Kerry Mattoxon, manager of the United Nation Veterans Department. According to the Department of Defense, Native Americans have one of the highest representations in the armed forces of the United States. Why do you think that is?
I would probably go back to World War II era, World War I era, okay? We weren't like we are today, okay? There was no plumbing, no electricity on a lot of reservations, probably all the reservations. I'm a young man. I consider myself a young man, mm-hmm. but we grew up with no toilet in by my grandparents' house. It was an outhouse and a pump house, no running water inside the house. So it was actually a way to get 3 square meals a day. Okay, good clothing. You know, Uncle Sam's going to give you a good pair of boots and socks, and they're going to take care of you and all this and that. And the Korean and the World War II veterans, they were pretty patriotic people also, because even during World War II, I want to say we weren't citizens of the United States yet, even, but yet there was a huge, you know, everybody signed up for the military, if you will. And so that's always interesting with me. You know, we weren't citizens of the United States, but yet we signed up in groves to defend the United States.
As I understand it, well, you work with helping Native American veterans connect with benefits. As I understand it, after World War II in particular, Native American service members came home, applied for benefits, and then in many cases were rejected, refused benefits. Is that right?
Yes. And what I want to say what happened was, if a veteran goes to the Veterans Affairs, VA, or whoever they went to for their benefit, and they were told no, no means no. So they never went back. And when I started the job probably 14 years ago, going on 15 years ago, my first customers were the Vietnam vets. But then after you kind of know what you're doing a little bit, we started hitting our Korean and World War II veterans up and finding out that, you know, the majority of them did not get their benefits that they were entitled to. And again, the stories I got from some of the World War II vets, and I love these guys. We only have a couple left. They're all in their middle 90s. And you know, when they landed at Normandy, for instance, they walked across Europe all the way. You know, there was so these guys were really warriors, if you will. But when they applied for their benefits, they were told no, and they just took that, okay, no means no, I'm not entitled to it.
Has that changed? Partly because of your efforts, are veterans from any era, Native American veterans, getting connected with the benefits that they've earned?
Yes, it is. In Wisconsin, we're making leaps and bounds with our we're called Tribal Veteran Service Officers. By state stature, 72 counties, 72 county veteran service officers. So now we have tribal veteran service officers. And what happened was, we had a tribal member that was a claims officer in Milwaukee at the regional office. And he was noticing no Native Americans were getting their benefits. And so he worked with our office. My predecessor was a retired Navy man. He started the first office, if you will. did everything that was needed to be done to get it up and going. And then he retired, and I took the reins. And our staff is 100% accredited with the VA to represent any veteran, not just Native veterans, any veteran. So we attend our training regularly to stay on top of issues. And with the way things are today, that computer in front of you, you know, it's going paperless, and you got to know what you're doing. So,
if there's a veteran listening, Native American or as you say, any veteran listening who is not sure if they're getting the benefits that they've earned, what is your advice to them? How do they get started?
I would recommend that they go to their tribal veteran service officer if they have one, and we only have a couple active in the state, the Ho-Chunk Nation, the Menominee Nation, Lakota Ray, and our office, and the Stockbridge Mohican. They're getting involved now too, and they're all accredited veteran service officers. If you don't have access to a tribal veteran service officer, go to your county. Each county has a county veteran service officer, and they will bring their take your discharge paper with you when you go there. You know, unfortunately, we had a young guy come to our community, and he asked for help, and we helped him. He said he was a Marine, and some of our veterans put him up in a hotel for a weekend with his family and kids, and come to find out he wasn't a veteran. And so we have to have that DD-214, your discharge paperwork, to verify.
That's all the time we have, Kerry. Thanks so much for coming down and joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Kerry Matoxin, manager of the Oneida Nation's Veteran Department. Coming up, we'll talk to a Native American veteran about his journey from the Army to becoming a tribal liaison in just a minute here on Central Time.